Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Good evening.
Hello?
Good evening. Can you hear me okay? I can. Is this Glenn?
Yes, this is Glenn.
Hey, Glenn. My name is Lee Gordon. I'm with the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo, Unity Design, the Better Detroit Youth Movement, and I also host the Gist of Freedom. I was waiting for Leslie to join us, but let's get into it. We've got about a half hour to talk about Day of Atonement, the Million Man March. And I'd just like our listeners to know that we are speaking with filmmaker Glenn Towery. He has created a film called Day of Atonement. Is that correct?
That's right. Well, actually, the name of the film is Long Live the Spirit of the Million Man March.
Okay. And why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the film, its objectives, and the reason it's so important that we not only speak to the Million Man March, the beauty that was the march itself, but I want to know, and I'm sure our listeners want to know, what did we glean from that march? What did we take home with us?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that feel that the Million Man March really didn't accomplish much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to beg to differ with anyone of that opinion or view. The reason why is people have to go back and look at the days and time back to early 1990s, the late 1980s, as to what was going on in our communities. And what was going on was sad. What was going on was genocidal. Mm-hmm. What was going on was something that really was something very new to black people in treating each other the way that they were doing.
Mm. Now, I'm going to ask you two questions. And, again, I agree with you that when we look at the day and time that we were at as a people in this country, we, in the 60s, I'm sure you will recall, we were guided and bonded through the strength of our unity as a people. And in that strength and in that bonding and in that power, we were able to overcome many injustices and inequalities in this country as a people and for our people. It seems since that time, though, and as you've already suggested in this conversation, we have sort of walked away from that element of brotherly love, sisterly love, people love, and had in many instances, as you spoke to, begin to take a path where we were no longer bound in that unity, where we no longer have the same love.
Okay, I would first like to say to your listeners out there also, and I'll get back exactly to what you were asking me to speak on. was that what this film, when you see Long Live the Spirit of the Million Man March, what I've tried to do is to tell the story in a way from the eyes of, and the point of view and the perceptions of the men and the women who attended the Million Man March.
Right. And, Glenn, I think you're so right. I mean, again, there's emotion and there's the analytical side of us. You know, we had a bunch of brothers here in Harlem. I'm actually back in New York from Detroit, but there were a bunch of brothers and sisters jumping up on the day the black man was inaugurated into the White House. And these brothers and sisters were jumping up and down on 125th Street in Harlem so high that their heads were surpassed the clouds, and they could say, man, this is what heaven looks like. And then what happens is that the following day you go home and you look in your cupboard and there's no tuna fish, and you look in the refrigerator and the milk is sour, and the reality of your situation sets in. Do you think that is part of what happened with this Million Man March?
Absolutely. I think that's part of what happened with it. But, you know, all is not lost. You know, I think God, and I don't know if you're a religious man or if you have a belief, but I know that there's been a higher power that has led me most of my life, me through tribulations. And I think that that march happened not only for then, but for now. Because by capturing what happened that day, even though when we went back home, it was lost, we now see what the possibility is. We now have it. We see what happened that day, and we see what can be. And let me tell
right.
you, the reason why I kept saying to myself, I was saying, Father, I said, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this film? I mean, after 15 years, no one's interested in this. I mean, but I was driven to complete it. And then one day I'm walking down the street promoting the film, and I see a group of young boys aged from, like, say, 10 to 19 years old in a barbershop on a Saturday. There's a lot of youngsters in there. And I ask them what they know about the Million Man March. They've never heard of it.
Right, right.
And that right there said enough to me.
Wow. And, I mean, that's so important. This show is really about making sure that all people, and not just our adults, but specifically our children, know about our rich history, heritage, and culture. And you know,
Never.
One of the things that's one of the things that I see today is that there's too much fragmentation, i.e., religion, special interests, politics, that somewhat really compromises our unity. But at this march, you had Minister Farrakhan, you had some of our great religious leaders of all denominations coming together for one cause and for the greater good. And that must have been a very important element of this, again, to showing the power of our unity and us being able to work together and walk together.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. But not only demonstrating that to the world, but demonstrating that to ourselves.
That's right. And our children.
In D.C., we had, surely there was, you know, there was controversy over how many black men were there. But surely there was well over a million and a half men at the Million Man March. And that's been confirmed. It's not because Glenn is saying that, but later the British newspapers and other newspapers reconfirmed that there were well over a million men at the Million Man March.
Why other media, not our own?
We're often cast as in the media as the guy that you can't trust, that the crack dealer, the gangbanger, the perception has been one. Let's paint a picture where you fear the black guy. You know, killer police just shooting down a black man for no reason at all. Well, it must have been something wrong because, you know, he killed him and he was black.
Right, right. Well, I would suggest
the
media is indeed one of our biggest enemies. I'm sorry for cutting you off, Glenn. What I'd like to do, however, is let's play a clip of Jesse talking about the condition of black men, and I believe that this clip is from the Million Man March, and I'll confirm that with my producer. Are we ready to play that clip? Producer, are we ready to play that clip? Jesse Jackson at the Million Man March.
Spirit of atonement. We pray to God to forgive us for our sins and the foolishness of our ways as we seek to do better and never to become bitter and let nothing, nobody stand between us and the love of God. The idea of a million men has touched a nerve deep in the heart of people yearning to breathe free. Big meetings were never allowed on the plantation. We've always yearned for a big meeting. Today, we've left the plantation. This is a big meeting. Raw nerves of ancient longing for dignity has been touched. I wish that Dr. King, Mr. Muhammad, Malcolm, Floyd McKissick, Medgar Evers, Fannie Lou Hamer, Daisy Bates, Violet Rushton, Paul Robeson, Cleve Robertson, Mr. Michaud, Whitney Young, Clarence Mitchell, Roy Wilkins, and Thurgood Marshall could see us now. America will benefit and ultimately be grateful for this day when the rising tide for racial justice and gender equality and family stability lifts the boat stuck at the bottom. All boats benefit. Why are we here today? Because we're under attack by the courts, legislatures, mass media, with the spies. Racists attack us for sport to win votes. We're attacked for sport to make money. But I tell you today, rabbit hunting ain't fun when the rabbits stop running and start fighting back. Here we are in 1995 trying to stop 1996 from becoming like 1896, the end of Second Reconstruction. Mr. Muhammad said, when we come into ourselves and know our truer selves, we'll have our place in the sun. President Lou Hamer said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Sojourner Truth said to the feminist movement that she sought justice between white and black women, ain't I a woman? Martin Luther King Jr. said, when he rescued Rosa Parks, better to be walking dignity than ride in shame. Why are we here today? Because we will not surrender. We will not bow. We choose life, but if we must die, let it be nobly and not like dogs, Paul McKay said. Dr. King said it was the shameful condition of the Negro. Today, it's disgraceful. Why do we march? Because our babies die earlier, infant mortality. Why do we march? Because we're trapped with second-class schools and first-class jails. What is the crisis? Wealth going upward. Jobs going outward. Middle class coming downward. The poor expanding rapidly. Affirmative action, diversion, and race baiting a scapegoat. We want a new America where we define justice, not just ICE, but justice for all of God's people. We want one set of rules. Why is there anger in the air? 300,000 more young blacks in jail than in college. Why is there anger, justifiable anger, in the air? Every major city, there are two new buildings, a new ballpark, and a new jail. Number one growth industry in urban America, jails. Half of all public housing built the last 10 years, jails. The jail budget's gone from $4 billion to $32 billion in 10 years. Jails. They chastise the mothers. They chase the daddies. They lock up the children. Every major city, there is this jail and this ballpark. These two mountains. Between the mountains, there is no industry. Jobs are leaving. So there is a canyon. In that canyon, fierce winds blow. A double sucking sound. Sucking jobs out. Sucking children up. People trapped in the valley of dry bones in pain and hurt and self-destruction. Why are there so many blacks in jail? Is it behavior or is it the rules?
Wow. Makes the skin on the back of my neck stand up a little bit when I hear that speech. Very powerful man. You know, I just like, and this is a little bit off of the beaten path, Glenn, but I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, Jesse Jackson being such a part of our people in history. But what was his role in the Obama campaign? Because I know that wasn't always as embracing as it should have been on the path of putting a black man in the White House. Do you want to speak to that a little bit and your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm not really familiar with that, and that's the only reason why I hesitate on commenting. But I do recall that there was some controversy over some things that he had said. But you have to understand, in every family, you know, there are criticisms. You know,
right.
It's just most families, their criticisms aren't publicly aired. So, you know, I think that Jesse Jackson's overall, I saw him at the inaugural, at the announcement of the victory. I think it was there in Chicago, and he seemed very moved.
Listen, I'd like to bring Leslie just Etheridge on. She is the executive producer and my co-host for the show. Leslie, I know that you wanted to comment on today's topic.
Yes, how are you, Glenn?
Oh, fine, Leslie. How are you today?
Well, I'm just so excited that you're on, and I can't tell you enough how happy I am that you made this film, and I think we need it, and I think we need another march. I think we need to have 1 million men or 10 million men praise God for the changes that he made in such a short period of time. I don't think too many people expected to have a black president in the United States this soon in American history. The Million Man March had something to do with the spirituality of the people who got out and voted and really became proactive in getting Obama elected.
I think, you know, our father, he doesn't just show up, he shows out. And mm-hmm. It's no fluke that almost 13 years to the day after the Million Man March, we have a black president.
And it was an open prayer. I don't think we ever experienced that in America, something of that magnitude where people just got together and said, we need help of a bad shape. It's beyond our control. We got to go to God.
Yeah, let me put this on the table. One of the things that I think we talked about is the fact that there really is today a need for another march. I think when we talk about the fact that we all came together for this beautiful experience and this beautiful and powerful event, we didn't take home anything with us that was sustaining. Our kids who didn't attend it didn't really know the power and beauty that the march was, and we didn't use it as an impetus or catalyst to really begin to evoke change within our community, something that we could all take home and build upon in unity and as a community.
I have to disagree with you on that. I think the moment that these gentlemen took the first step to go to the march, change was already in the process. You know, I'm a Christian, and my motto is we walk by faith, not by sight. And the minute that you make up your mind that you're going to do something, knowing that you don't know what is going to happen, but you believe something positive is going to happen, the changes already have happened. You know, you don't need a leader. You don't need to do anything as far as what people think that you need to do. It's in your heart. And I think those men had a change of heart when they went, when they decided to go to the march. And I think their lives, they went through a transformation, and it's obvious that we are experiencing it now, and it's not a fluke, it's not a coincidence that we have the president in the house right now.
Okay, but where are our children and where are our communities right now? I want to know what is the benefit of the march that has, again, sustained us and our children and our communities today.
I had a coworker say that to me, and he was of a Caucasian background. And he said, it's not going to make a difference. It didn't make a difference. How has it made a difference? I said, we're living in a difference right now. When he said that there was a student with a haircut with Obama's name engraved in his haircut. I said, come here, young man. I said, show him your haircut. I said, that's the difference. That's the difference. When you have a young black man, his pants may have been sagging a little bit, but he wore that haircut with pride.
One of the things we haven't talked about, Leslie, is that what happened in terms of crime and violence in the community directly after the Million Man March.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I addressed in the documentary because it's important for people to realize that, yes, gang violence did show a big decrease in our neighborhood, that there were some very positive things that came out of the march, that the testimonies of men who went back, like even myself, and changed their lives. And you can find a lot of this testimony is right now if you begin to talk to men who attended the march or women whose husbands and boyfriends attended the march when they came back, how they saw a market change, something positive.
Tell me about your experience. You told me that the bus ride was awesome, and we compared your experience to the film Get on the Bus.
I actually did not take the bus. I took a plane. But on that plane, there were a lot of Million Man March. And we had it was just a tremendous spirit on that plane. But what I had said to you about the Spike Lee film and the premise of it with this young man that was using the N-word so much, and, you know, I really didn't care for the movie because I didn't think that it was truly indicative of the spirit of the Million Man March, of what really happened there. And you know, the thing I would say to Spike Lee, who I really do appreciate and respect as a director, but this wasn't one of my favorite films of his, and not in the least. But what I would say is you would really have had to have been there in order to be able to capture that spirit and put it on film. The N-word has been used that way, and I challenge black filmmakers right now, take that word out of the films, you know, because you come to a point to where you begin to say, is society instructing the filmmaker, or is the filmmaker instructing society? And that's a very serious question that you have to ask yourself when you're dealing sociologically with people, especially your own people, who are so vulnerable. So I'm saying to you, please, black filmmakers, you know, and I know you go back to period pieces and places where you think that it has to be used, but ask yourself that question very seriously before you use that word in any more motion picture.
Wow. Well, I think I really respect your sentiments, and you sound genuine about using the N-word. And, you know, and I don't want to air out dirty laundry, but we noticed that Jesse, even though they prayed for change during the Million Man March, when they got it, Jesse was one of the people to criticize Obama.
Well,
He buried the N-word, but during the Fox newscast, he resurrected the N-word and talked about slicing off the president's private parts. Now, can we talk about Sharpton? He was a speaker as well, right?
Yes, he was. Very elegant.
Right. Do you think he was supportive? Do you think he showed brotherly love towards President Obama when he was running? Or was he more attached to Hillary?
You know, I'm not really, I really wasn't that tuned in on Al Sharpton during that whole political cycle. I was more tuned in to the overall feeling that the nation itself seemed to be carrying. I got swept up in everybody else getting swept up. Individuals became like little chattering voices to me when Iowa went for the president. When these small states that you know are really predominantly white started going for the president, my mind got swept up in that. And I said to myself, there's a new paradigm here. There's been a shift. Something very important has happened here, not only for black people in America, but especially for white people in America. And, you know, what that shift was, I'm still trying to put my finger on it, but I think really what happened was that they were affected by so much negativism and racism and being taken advantage of by the previous administration, being lied to, so much evil, that when they felt a righteous intention coming their way, that it overrode, it became bigger than any personal or racist or any other feeling that they might have. That's what changed the paradigm.
Do you think that they had their own million-man, quote, march when they went to the polls, they marched to the polls? Was that their spiritual movement?
You can say that. That would probably be more like a 200-man march, huh?
Yeah, I think they made a spiritual.
And that was one of the greatest elements of the march, because it showed us that we can overcome our differences because of our conditions. You know, a drowning man doesn't ask the person's religion who's trying to pull him out of the water.
And the best part about that drowning man is that he knows he's drowning. And that he
knows he's drowning
asking
and
for help.
And so he grabs that hand to pull himself up. But
what do you have to say about Lowry, Reverend Lowry, speaking in both at the Million Man March and at President Obama's inauguration?
Well, you know, Reverend Joseph Lowry he's been in the forefront of the civil rights movement all of his life. And for him to be at the Million Man March, that gave the march immediate credibility from the standpoint of, and I love what he said at the march, and I have it in my film. He said something to the extent of, you know, he was asked by the media why he was attending the Million Man March, and he told him, he said, it's better that you ask me why I'm attending it than I would rather you ask me that than to come into my office and see that I'm not there and ask me why I'm not attending the Million Man March.
Right. You know, listen to the clip, and it speaks to what you said about we don't need any handouts from the government. Here we go.
Very distinguished Reverend Hartford Brookins, Clay Evans, and Joseph Lowry, will you please receive them?
I am H.H. Brookins of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, one of the bishops of the church, representing thousands of AMEs that are gathered with this mighty crowd in solidarity, the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church and the AME Zion Church, Bishop Hennings, Bishop Brown, and Bishop Carr. I am delighted to stand here before you today to represent to you that the church, thousands strong gathered here today, together with millions here, stand in solidarity with all of the brothers and sisters who have come from afar. The Bible gives me one message to give to you today. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves, and after you humble yourself, pray to Almighty God, and seek my face, turn from your wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and God will forgive our sins, and God will heal our land. Our land is sick. The people in it are sick. On behalf of all of us here today, we lift up our voices and say, we stand on the pinnacle of possibility, and we stand on the rim of an open day, and we believe that a new day has dawned, and it has come on the Washington Capitol. Now we come here today to tell you that we did not come here on a government grant. You did not come here asking for aid and assistance from white folks on the Hill. We came here because we care about the well-being of all of our people in this land, both young and old, and we care about the killings going on in our community. We have come here to say, as clergymen together with you, put down your drugs, put down your crime, put down that which is wrong,
yes, sir.
Put down that which is evil, and let us lift up our heads unto the hills from whence our help cometh. He said, this is the day that he has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. As we look around this globe, we know that we stand with other sisters and brothers who have been through the furnace and been through the flood, been through hard trials, but all of them through the blood. We come here today to say that we are with this movement. We did not come by the thousand, but instead we came by the million. They told us not to come. They asked us not to be a part. But I tell you today, when I look around and see how sick this nation is, we could do nothing but get on the planes and buses and trains and join the multitude that John saw. He said, I saw a new heaven and I saw a new earth, for the old heaven and the old earth have passed away, and there is no more separation. And today there shall be no separation. There shall be no left out people. We will no longer be rejected. We will no longer be segregated. We will no longer be Jim Crowed. We will no longer be shoved aside. We can no longer stand back asking for a handout from a politician, and that's from the White House to your house and my house.
Very powerful man.
To mention Stevie, though, Stevie, I think, and I captured it on film, had, I think, one of the most memorable moments happen on film, because, you know, he's not a sighted person. And he said something to the extent of, I can't see you, but I can feel your presence.
Let's play the clip.
Greetings to all. I cannot visually see you, but I can see your spirit. And I can feel your presence. To share just a few words. Obviously, it is clear that I'm here for every poor man born in the ghetto, for every middle class man born in the middle class, and for every rich man, to say that no matter where we might be in class, we are all one people. I'm here to also say to all of you that it is very important for you to be calm, to make this historical day, and not just American history, but world history, a day of peace, a day of oneness, a day of celebration, a day of love, a day of brotherhood. For I do believe that, and that we as people of African descent are here, and as Africa is the beginning of all civilization, it is now that time that if we come together as one, and we today are sitting at that table of brotherhood that Dr. King talked about, if we come together as one today and commit ourselves as we have and move forward beyond this day to making all of the things that we talk about reality, then in fact we will be the beginnings of all civilizations, of all cultures and all people coming together. So I'm here to celebrate that day. This is that day. I too would like to say that this day and this celebration is bigger than any one leader. It is God's plan. I would like to, before leaving, share with you in words and in song. These are the words that I would like to share with you from Conversation Peace. Staring right at 2000 AD, as if mankind's atrocities to man has no history, but just a glance at life at 2000 BC, we find traces of man's inhumanity to man. There's no mystery. All for one, one for all. There's no way we'll reach our greatest height unless we heed the call. Me for you, you for me. There's no chance of world salvation unless the conversation's peace. We can't stare, watch, and say, this can't be. When there's a plan by any means to have cleansing of one's ethnicity. And we cannot act as if we don't hear nor see, like in the Holocaust of 6 million Jews and 150 million blacks during slavery. All for one, one for all. There's no way we'll reach our greatest height unless we heed the call. Me for you, you for me. There's no chance of world salvation unless the conversation's peace. When publicly or privately convened, may love, positivity be your basic theme. And should you put your trust in some prophet in life, give him trust, but your faith must stay with the one who gave the ultimate sacrifice. For all for one, one for all, there's no way we'll reach our greatest height unless we heed the call. Me for you, you for me. There's no chance of world salvation unless the conversation's peace. Staring right at 2000 AD, BAD. Mankind's atrocities to man has no history. But just a glance at life in 2000 BC, we find traces of man's inhumanity to man. There's no history, mystery. All for one, one for all. There's no way we'll reach our greatest sight unless we heed the call. Me for you, you for me. There's no chance of world salvation unless the conversation's peace. I love you, and God bless you.
Okay, what do you guys think about that?
Very powerful.
Stevie has me heart and soul. I love Stevie Wonder. And, you know, I loved him before the Million Man March because just by listening to the lyrics in his song, you know you're dealing with a very conscious human being, someone who has an awareness as to the sufferings of people, to the history of people, as to what's going on in the world, and who cares. And, you know, that's, to me, his caring is one of the greatest things about Stevie Wonder.
And for our youngsters who are listening, let's talk about Stevie's activism. He wrote a song and led a campaign to help Mandela be freed from the jails of South Africa, correct?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. And he also wrote a song and led the campaign to make Martin Luther King's birthday a national holiday. So
yes,
I think all of these good deeds, I think he is blessed by being able to attend this Million Man March and inauguration. I think his career came to a full circle. Now, could you define the word atonement for the young listeners who may not know what that word means?
It really means at one mint or at one with God.
Wow.
But to atone is to ask for forgiveness for your sin.
Arlie Gordon mentioned the role that women played. And I do have a clip from Maya Angelou, but before we play the clip, I'd like to hear your opinion on Maya Angelou and what it felt like and how she was received at the Million Man March.
They loved Maya Angelou. Are you
Who
kidding?
Is she?
Oh, my goodness. They just, number one, she was there. And I have it on film. The love for her was so strong that while she was reading her poem, I think she could feel the love, it broke her for a second. She struggled to finish her poem without crying. You know, no, you just can't say enough. And then I had a personal experience with Maya Angelou. I sent her actually an old version of the documentary, I think about a year ago, and she wrote me. And I treasure that letter to this day. She thanked me for doing the documentary and wished me well. And she said, basically in her letter, that she hopes that it goes out and everyone gets the opportunity to see it. I didn't want to forget this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have an idea for a book, and I'm looking for men and women who went to the Million Man March, who had a spouse or a boyfriend who went to the Million Man March, and it created a fantastic change in their life. They should write me at millions13@gmail.com.
Again, the title of your film?
Long Live the Spirit of the Million Man March. But this
Thank
for
you.
The book, if you have that kind of a story and you'd like to be a part of the book, write me at millions13@gmail.com. That's MILLIONS, the number 1 and 3.com. When you go there, you can purchase Long Live the Spirit of the Million Man March. Also, because the price is $18.99 for the DVD, and I know a lot of people are going to want to have the DVD, but I also have, for people who purchase it, a study guide for students that they can have, students, teachers, and families. It's premiering on the 27th of this month at a website called IndieFlix, IndieFlix.com.
Coming up, poet Maya Angelou.
Let's give it to Sister Maya Angelou, our mother and poet laureate and sister and friend. Give it to her. Thank you, sister.
My brothers and sons and grandsons and cousins and nephews, the night has been long. The wound has been deep. The pit has been dark, and the walls have been steep. Under a dead blue sky on a distant beach, I was dragged by my braids just beyond your reach. Your hands were tied, your mouth was bound, you couldn't even call out my name. You were helpless and so was I. But unfortunately, throughout history, you worn a badge of shame. I say the night has been long. The wound has been deep. The pit has been dark, and the walls have been steep. But today, voices of old spirit sound speak to us in words profound. Across the years, across the centuries, across the oceans, and across the seas, they say, draw near to one another. Save your race. You have been paid for in a distant place. The old ones remind us that slavery's pains has paid for our freedom again and again. The night has been long. The pit has been deep. The night has been dark, and the walls have been steep. The hells we have lived through and live through still have sharpened our senses and toughened our will. The night has been long. This morning I look through your anguish right down to your soul. I know that with each other we can make ourselves whole. I look through the posture and past your disguise and see your love for family. In your big brown eyes, I say, clap hands and let's come together in this meeting ground. I say, clap hands and let's deal with each other with love. I say, clap hands and let us get from the low road of indifference. Clap hands, let us come together and reveal our hearts. Let us come together and revive our spirits. Let us come together and cleanse our souls. Clap hands. Let's leave the preening and stop impostering in our own history. Clap hands. Call the spirit back from the ledge. Clap hands. Let us invite joy into our conversation, courtesy into our bedrooms, gentleness into our kitchen, care into our nursery. The ancestors remind us, despite the history of pain, we are going on people who will rise again, and still we rise. Brothers, let's give it to Sister Maya Angelou, our mother and poet laureate and sister and friend. Give it to her.
Yeah. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. That which touches me most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me. We who believe in freedom and that freedom.
Let's sing it with us. Come on.
We who believe in freedom and that freedom comes. To me, young people come first.
They come first.
They have the courage where we fail. And if I can but shed some light as they carry us through the gate.
Show me everybody.